You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, I want to personally invite you to Nashville this October for the Pipeline Conference. This year's theme is all about succession. We'll be talking succession all the way from senior leadership at a church down to the preschool volunteer. So this conference is really for everyone. Bring your whole staff. Bring a buddy. Call a friend. Speakers include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, Tammy Heim, and many, many more. To register, go to myleadershippipeline.com. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now, enjoy the podcast. You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm joined here today by Eric Geiger, who is my boss, but also my co-host.
But in this role, you act like you're the boss.
No!
Which is fine. I believe in roving leadership. So in this moment, you're the driver, man. You're the driver.
Well, I don't know, man, because I think as we have done, anybody who listens to the podcast regularly knows you've been on talking about our organizational culture or vision or leadership pipeline. And I think I'm pretty deferential when it comes.
No, man. I actually like when you're the daddy at this stuff, man. You're awesome at this stuff. So you take the lead. Thanks for letting me be a co-host. I'm excited to hear from Levi today and learn from him. This is going to be a fun time.
That's right. Our guest today is Levi Lesko. So you may know him from Passion or Outcry or a couple of the books that he's written. His most recent book is Swipe Right. And the interesting thing that I think about that book is, you know, you may look at the title and say, hey, that's not for me.
How did you come up with the title, Levi? Give us the background. Obviously, it's a cultural title, but give us the heart behind it.
Okay, introduce yourself quickly. And
sorry,
then in the course of that, you can
tell us about the book.
Well, partially, I feel like I need to, like, give you two a room a moment. You guys, I was here going, I felt a little uncomfortable for listening in. But I'm so glad to be on this podcast and just love what you guys are doing. The Swipe Right book. I've been, since my wife and I got married 13 years ago, we've been traveling around the country speaking at events specifically for young people about sex and dating and marriage, just because it's such a mess. And we navigated that through our engagement and dating. And we just had a burden as youth pastors to really minister to young people on God's plans for sex without doing it in a way that just basically says, like, don't. Like, that's oftentimes the church's go-to message on sexuality. It's like, no, where God has so much to say about sex and the enjoyment of this gift he gave to us. And so we've been speaking on this topic for, like I said, over a decade. And I knew I wanted to write about it because, you know, traveling around the country, you can't get to everybody as quick as you want, but a book can go into every bookstore in the country at the same time. And so right around that time when I was beginning the writing process in earnest, I read a Vanity Fair article that my brother had sent me about the culture of Tinder. It's such a monster, a billion downloads or something like that. They've had a trillion swipes and just the amazing amount of change to what sexuality looks like in our culture, where many people will swipe through the course of a week and have sex with several people from these interactions. And it's made having sex with a stranger as easy as ordering an Uber. And so that kind of gave me the hook for the book, because obviously when we talk about right and wrong, that's the conversation that we should be thinking about, not just left or right. So that kind of is how that all came about.
Man, I read that same article and it was heartbreaking. I remember reading pieces of it where, even those who are engaged recognize the emptiness of it and the heartbreak and how the casual nature of the sex definitely brought no true joy or intimacy. If I remember correctly, guys were bragging that they could get a girl to sex even without ever talking, just by text and even emojis, just get them to where they wanted them to be, even without having an intimate conversation. And then recognizing how empty that was. And so, man, that was a for a guy who, you know, I'm now not a young guy anymore, 41 years old.
You got married like super early.
I did. It was a really sad article to read.
Yeah, it broke my heart. And there's been subsequent ones. I think there was a great piece in the New York Post recently about how the mechanical turnstile approach to sexuality leaves people, like you said, empty and dead. And just the proliferation of sexual dysfunction and sexual addiction in large metropolitan areas like New York has just skyrocketed with these sorts of apps. And I think we were just not intended for sex to become an experience like that.
It's really, I mean, you know, I feel like more and more in our day and age, everything is moving toward a commoditization of everything. And now you're seeing that happen even with relation, a very intimate relationship or what should be a relationship.
Levi, before we get into the five questions that we want to learn from you on, tell us a little bit about the church you planted and about where you grew up and give us the bio on you.
For sure. I'm originally from Colorado and was raised in New Mexico, and then eventually found myself newly married to my beautiful wife, Jennifer, living in Southern California. We were sort of newly into ministry, had done youth ministry for a while, and we ended up as in the position of teaching pastor at a good-sized church, a couple thousand people in San Juan Capistrano. Kind of had really just a perfect little life, you know, newly married, lived a block from the ocean, season passes to Disneyland, just really minimal responsibilities outside of teaching. And so we were very happy and could have just gone on like that indefinitely. But we had simultaneously this stirring within us. I don't know how to describe it other than like a entrepreneurial drive and the need to create our own organization and birth something from the ground. And it was kind of this Lewis and Clark kind of need to go on an expedition, which made no sense from a, you know, career trajectory to leave where we had it so well. And yet we couldn't deny we felt the need to do that. And I had been to Montana one time, and there was a guy who had said, oh, you should come plant a church here. You know, churches like you lead in Southern California are a dime a dozen. You can throw a rock, bounce it off, you know, Saddleback and Endon Mariners. And, you know, to so many great churches. And to be fair, there's millions of people, so they're all justified. But he said in Montana, it's just not quite like that. And it's, you know, as I went to visit, it was very Bible Belt, very small little churches with the Ten Commandments in the front lawn, you know, and just kind of not the more seeker type, you know, non-denominational church that you find that culture in, you know, Southern California. And so anyhow, I just felt this strange desire to move to Montana and start a church. And so my wife and I thought, hey, look, what's the worst that can happen if we go? We were 24 at the time. If we fail, give it 5 years and nothing comes of it, we can come back to California with our tail between our legs and it's like it never happened, you know? And so we literally just up and moved to Montana, dead of winter, knew nobody, told a couple friends, had enough savings to live for a year. And we literally just found a room above a bar and started having a Bible study. And from then to now, that church, and it's been a decade, 10 years we've been here, we now have locations in seven different cities in Montana. We're about to start two more. And then we have one in Salt Lake City, Utah. And by the time this podcast is published, we'll also have one in Portland, Oregon. So it's been an amazing journey just watching God move as we preach the gospel. And we've just been, we like to say we've been skiing in front of an avalanche, just holding on for dear life.
Man, that's an incredible story. 10 years. That's great, man. That's a great run. Do you feel like an old man now after 10 years? You're still really young.
I've been old since I was 18. My favorite thing in the world is my trees. I have these trees in my backyard. Oh, water.
What kind of trees?
Oh gosh. Don't get Todd. If you talk about trees or guns, Todd goes ballistic.
Well, I have guns too, cause I live in Montana, but they're called aspens, and they'll get 40 feet tall when they're full grown. Right now they're like 20 feet.
So that means you're going to stay there several more years then. You're stuck.
I'm going to be buried here for sure.
Well, man, let me get into to the questions. Obviously, you're a leader who's hungry, move there and flexible and passionate and willing to learn and grow. So tell us today, who are you learning from? What are you learning now? Who are you learning from today?
Man, I'm learning from anybody I can, for sure. Podcasts. I mean, I'm a student of leadership, listen to like yours, great podcasts. And so I never miss an episode of Andy Stanley's or Craig Groeschel's. I'm usually in half a dozen books and just watching what other better men who have gone before me have had to say and done. And, you know, I've got people in my life like Pastor Jack Graham from Prestonwood and Pastor Stephen Furtick from Elevation, and people who I can, you know, reach out to and talk to with specific issues or organizational culture type situations. But then, you know, just I've always been a reader, and I'm reading a book right now about the making of the Brooklyn Bridge and just the complexities of dealing with that. It was 1876, and they managed to build the longest suspension bridge in the world. They didn't even have cars yet, but just
how'd
learning.
You pick that one out? How'd you pick that one out? Just walking in Barnes and Noble and say, I'm gonna read a book about the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, I took my daughter across the Brooklyn Bridge this year on bicycle.
Nice, I've done that. It's beautiful.
Right. Isn't it? Well, when the pedestrians will get out of your way, but I was just looking at this thing going, how the heck did this get built? And so it's been on my mind lately. And, it freaked me out that they put the pilings into the water. And anyhow, in my Amazon feed, it popped up, the Great Bridge. And it's a great read. David McCullough, who wrote 1776. Yep, yep. And it's a great book.
That bridge, this is interesting. That bridge is based on a bridge in Cincinnati.
Really?
Yep. That was the prototype was actually kind of Cincinnati. Then they took that and went to Brooklyn. And then from Brooklyn, I was just in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and their bridge also based on.
Really?
That. Yep.
It started in Cincy.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. Todd and I did student ministry together back in the day in Cincinnati.
Yeah. And so it was more than 10 years ago.
What's the bridge called in Cincinnati they did there?
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Todd read something somewhere. He's spouting out.
No, I'm from there. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, not from Cincy, but from that area.
Yeah.
Well, that's incredible. Now I need that's another bridge I need to research. Now.
Yeah, we'll get there you a book, man. We'll send you a book.
Come on. Good. Yeah. Deal. So pretty much anyone I can, and I just I'm looking to grow and learn. And so, yeah, that would be kind of books, podcasts, people, anyone, everybody. Yeah. Often my mistakes are how I tragically, I tend to learn things the hard way.
Yep. Same here.
Well, let's get on to question two then. And that is, you may have already answered a little bit, but what's the main point of emphasis in your leadership right now? I don't want to assume it's campuses, but it sounds like you're doing a lot of those. But what's the main point of your emphasis of leadership right now with your team or with yourself?
Yeah, our greatest organizationally, our greatest emphasis is twofold. Number one, it's building our leadership pipeline so that we have not only the crop of people we need for the jobs we need today, but so that we have the systems in place that will create the people we need for the hires tomorrow and beyond. We don't have a fresh life in San Diego, and we don't have any plans to open one, but our great joke on staff is, who's going to work for Fresh Life San Diego? You know, kind of the idea is, when that day comes, will we have the person being groomed that's ready to go? So
that's great. Tell us some learnings from the leadership pipeline. So we talk about that a lot and the importance of that. So it's great to hear you emphasizing that and making that a priority. What are some lessons? If someone said, man, I'm starting from scratch on building a leadership pipeline, what do I need to do? What do you tell that leader?
I would say, first of all, the people, everybody you need for every position is probably at your church or going to be. I think the temptation is always going to be to look without and to want to get on Twitter and, you know, advertise your hire and hope that the perfect candidate with the perfect skills and the perfect ability is going to, you know, see your tweet and come work for you and leave their existing church. And, you know, and I'm not saying you should never hire from without. I've not had great experiences with it, though for certain positions and at certain level, perhaps maybe there's no alternative. But I bet God has probably put within your organization who you need. and they're not going to be developed unless you do it. And that's the key. And that's the difficult part. It's easy to find to see a diamond on someone else's staff and go, man, if I could hire them, we'd go over here. But if you would just develop the coal into the diamond within, you'll be much happier, and there'll be a cultural fit because they'll literally be a product of your culture. And so that's what I would say to start with from a mental perspective. I would say then practically for us, it's been taking active steps to develop our current leadership quotient and then casting the vision for everybody to be a multiplier. You know, the easiest thing in the world is to just do whatever ministry it is you're doing. But when you're releasing other people to do that ministry, not only are we doing biblically what we're supposed to do at, equipping the saints for the work of the ministry, but we're also duplicating ourselves and duplicating those who know what we do. I mean, just one of the first things you have to ask is, can we pass the school bus test? That is to say, if I was hit by a school bus tomorrow, who would do this job? How many people know how to do what I do? And it's really scary. You think about when, and if it ever happens, someone's sick or out of town or gets killed, and then you think like, dang, it was one person we were relying on in an unhealthy extent. And I guess every CEO, every pastor should ask themselves how much tribal knowledge exists within their ministry. That is to say, that's something that's not codified, not in a manual, that 10 people don't know how to do. Anybody who that person's the only one who knows how to do that hiring thing, or that one person's the only one who understands Fellowship One. I don't think anyone knows how to run Fellowship.
That's awesome.
Whoever you're relying on, where if they were hit by a school bus tomorrow, then you're not passing that school bus test, because there should be a multiplication of those who know how to do whatever that person's doing. So, and then the last thing for on that, and then my other second aspect of it, and then after I answer the personal aspect, so we're deep in it now, but I would say we do things to advance our hiring, but we also hire with a mind towards other roles. For example, every campus has a position we call a campus coordinator, and they answer to the campus pastor. But one of the things we do is we only hire those for the campus coordinator position who we think could have the makings of a campus pastor within them someday. Because the best way to grow a new campus pastor is within an existing campus, not in our paradigm at a central role. Yep. Where they're not actually on the front line. So that's a huge one. Then personally, my point of emphasis has been the lead lag disciplines of execution thing. I've been running that for a year. I decided after I read the book to not evaluate it, but to run it for a year and then look back. And so my two disciplines for my lag goals were that every worship experience would end at a certain time. And that, of course, falls on me because the songs end on time. It's whether I am feeling extra anointed or not that day. And so I've been really fighting hard to land at the exact moment and to cut our worship experience time down to 70 minutes. And then the second thing has been that I mentioned our assimilation class every single Sunday from the platform at some point. And I've done those things without fail since September.
Man, that's great. The book, are you talking about four disciplines of execution? Yes,
that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yep. So we've mentioned that a couple of different times on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a great read.
So if you remember, the four disciplines start out with a wildly important goal. And then it moves on to
lead measures, established lead measures.
Then it moves on to scorecard.
And then number four, a cadence of accountability. And so people will sometimes ask what the difference between a lead measure and a lag measure is. And a way to think about it, if I'll give you a sports analogy, then I'll give a personal analogy. If you think about it from sports, lead measures would be, let's get X number of rebounds, force X number of turnovers. And a lag measure would be the win. And so you can't just say, hey, let's win. You need to establish some lead measures that will produce the win. Or you can think about it personally. If you want to lose 20 pounds or 5 pounds, that's the lag. But the lead is, I've got to exercise X number of times a week. I have to have a calorie deficit of X number of calories a day. And so you have lead measures that will produce the lag.
The idea is, I know if I hit these
lead measures. Right. I'm going to hit my lag. And the scorecard and regular cadence of looking at that scorecard helps you know whether or not you're on track. Do I need to shift or change something to make sure I hit my goal?
Now, that part of it can't be overstated, the importance of it, because otherwise you get the organizational, are we still doing that thing? And in my back room, I have a big scorecard. My daughters have stickers they can put on it for me or not, depending on whether I hit them. And it's just a part of our week.
Man, so you mentioned the assimilation class, and that you mention it every week. I've gotten asked, and Todd, I know you've gotten asked this before, by pastors wondering how often they need to mention their new member class or whatever it is that they're trying to emphasize. So, Levi, you're saying since September, you've mentioned it every single week?
Every single weekend from the platform, whether pre-message, in-message, or at the end of the message,
and
every week.
And that's you hitting it, or is that during the announcement time?
Be personal. And in most cases, the campus pastor or host as well.
Wow.
And still with all that, I have a friend who's a bull rider. He rides bulls, and he comes to church when he can and watches on the web when he can. We were hanging out the other day. This is after 8 months of this. He says to me, "Hey, this summer I'm going to be in town for at least an 8-week stretch. I want to go to that thingy you talked about that time." I'm like, "That thingy?" And I knew right away he meant our assimilation class. And I said, "That thingy?" He goes, "Yeah, that thing you talked about. There's like food, and you figure out like how you could serve or something." I was just letting him go, because I was like, this is priceless. This is something I've mentioned. I know he's heard about me say this like 80 times, you know? And it's just so funny. And that's him coming. He's pretty consistent. Most right. people come once or twice a month.
And he has a relationship with you. So it just shows how many times we have to say something as a leader before it can finally sink in.
Yeah. If you're wondering whether or not you've said it too much, don't ask a staff person.
Find
the bull rider.
Find the bull rider.
So have you seen an impact by the discipline of talking about it every week for 8 months?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I decided I will not look at it till a year, and I'm not to September yet, but, I just poured over statistics all day about the weekend, but, I think we're seeing growth all across our church. Whether we can pin it to that, you know, of course anyone's guess is their guess, but my hunch is, and I'm always operating out of some sort of hunch, I guess we all are, is that is influencing growth from my perspective.
That's great, man. Well, I want to move on to number three, and this might overlap some of the things you already talked about, but what are two or three things that you tell yourself, I've got to do these two or three things daily? Like two or three things that you feel if you don't do these things that you're failing as a leader, two or three things that are essential in leading yourself, but also leading the flock well.
Other than reading the Bible.
Well, that's good too, but two or three.
It is, yeah. But I mean, hopefully that's a given.
I would say my own personal fitness is paramount. If I'm not feeling fit, I don't feel like I'm not, it's just a cascading failure cycle. If I'm not getting to the gym and having that time just to work on my body and to try and keep that going.
So that's every day for you?
And then I'll have a day off on the weekend, but it's during the work week. So important to me to stay in that kind of, it just begins my day on the right trajectory. And then I would say reading outside of sermon prep, whether it's devotional, I'm going through Eugene Peterson's new book of sermons right now, and just really feeling that growth and not anything that I'm going to potentially use for a staff talk or whatever, just kind of my own reading. And then I'd say the third thing would probably be praying for my church. I feel like it's so easy to pray for sermons, pray for initiatives, but when I'm actually praying for people in my church and issues, seems basic, but it just makes such a difference on my heart for the people, that there's that tenderness and compassion. I get a list of every 2 weeks, my wife and I get emailed to us a list of 8 specific people with specific things they've asked for to be prayed for. And we kind of rotate through that. And so that's when I take time on that, it always pays off.
Man, I love it. Exercise, learning, prayer. It's great.
Good deal. All right. I am going to ask the question, and then I'm going to immediately ask a question about one of the charts that you mentioned earlier.
Ty's so, in love with charts, man. I was nervous when you mentioned charts because I thought Ty's going to double click on this one. If it's a quadrant,
you're right.
If it's a quadrant, if you have a quadrant, hey, Levi, this is going to become extremely awkward.
Everyone else must bring data.
I don't disagree with that, but my man, he's got a thing for quadrants, man. Just warn you, Levi.
He didn't say a quadrant. He said a chart.
I could tell your eyes lit up.
Okay. So the fourth question is, what does leadership in your home look like? I haven't done it for a while. I did it with one of my kids. I asked for a performance review with my kid. I think it's time for me to do it again. What was the thing with the charts? You were talking about you had a chart and there were stars that your daughters could put up or your kids could put up. What was that about?
So that's attached to my lead measures. When I mention it and when I end the worship experience on time back in our green room, there's a chart my PA made that has stickers that the girls can put on that.
Okay.
But we do have.
I was really excited that you had brought the measures into your home with your family. How messed up am I?
It's pretty messed up, Todd. It's pretty messed up.
That's pretty good. We do have charts at home. Daisy today, she unloaded the dishwasher and she did get hearts. Clover gets X's and Olivia gets checks. So they all have their own thing. We'll see what my boy will get. Maybe skulls and crossbones. But
that's awesome.
But leadership in my home, it looks like a hot mess so often. I feel like there's nothing I so regularly feel like a failure at than being a dad. But it's something I'm hungry to grow in. My greatest desire is to keep them talking and to really let it be a conversation and not a dictatorship. I think the easiest thing is to become a petty dictator or petty ogre as a parent, because you have the utilitarian trump card of I said so. But trying to, you know, obviously there's authority and obviously it's important and obviously there's boundaries and rules, but to let the relationship breathe and to keep that heart of fun going. And so one of the things that looks like for me with my kids is rotating through who of them gets to come with me on a, you know, fly date. We'll go to a trip together and tag on an afternoon at a museum or like I said, my daughter on the Brooklyn Bridge, and really trying to build those keystone memories for them of not just, you know, do this, don't do that, go to bed, but to have the friendship aspect and to have adventure together.
That's great. So looking back, you have been leading well for a while. What would you tell 20-year-old Levi about leadership, about leading other people? So if you could look back and listen to wise counsel from yourself when you were 20, what would you have benefited from hearing?
I probably would have. I mean, I would encourage myself. I would try and encourage the heck out of myself back then. I think it's so easy to be a critic of your own work, especially. So I just said, you know, my pretty answer, because I get asked this question a good bit, is I would tell young Levi, this is going to hurt more than you think it will, but God will do more than you think he can. And that's probably the salient advice I would give myself. But if I was to get specific, I would probably say, think about the scalability and the leadership pipeline issue sooner. I'm still young at 34, and we've been in earnest thinking about this for a good 2 years, but I still would have started it from almost the day one.
Mm. Good deal. Well, we certainly have enjoyed our time together with you and the conversation, and we'll follow up in the show notes. We'll put links to the Passion Conference as well as one of the books that we mentioned Swipe Right and Four Disciplines of Execution as well. So
very different books, right?
Slightly different. Yes.
That's hilarious.
So we have two books we're going to recommend. Four Disciplines of Execution and Swipe Right.
That's awesome.
That's as neurotic as it gets, right?
Hey, there. You know what? That's the way you end a 5LQ. Thanks, guys, for listening. Be sure to hop on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we want to invite you one more time to join us in Nashville, this October 11th through 13th for the Pipeline Conference. It's important to also note this conference did sell out last year. So if you're planning on attending, go ahead and get in early.